Welcome to Moving Averages, a new financial podcast from Vox Markets. This series will feature expert market analysis, interviews with top traders and commentators, and much more to bring you fresh insights into the world of finance.
On the podcast today, we had Nick Raj. He's been trading and investing since 1985 and has worked for global investment banks in Sydney, London, and Singapore. He was a director of Macquarie Bank, ran his own hedge fund, and now has a global client base where he consults on trading and investing plans. I had a fascinating conversation with him, and I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Martin. Great to be here.
Absolute pleasure. So, Nick, for those who don't know you, do you want to give us a quick CV breakdown?
Sure, yep. So I've now been trading for about 33 years. I started literally straight out of school into the financial markets. I fell into it by accident. It's not something that I wanted to do. I don't have a university degree or anything like that. I basically fell into a job pushing paper at a stockbroking firm, and then kind of started looking at charts and that kind of stuff and following trends. And that's really where I started. That was back in 1985. Did the usual, got wiped out in 1987 like every 19-year-old fool with no risk management would do, but learned my lesson and have been trading ever since. And for the first 17 years, I was a futures trader, and I actually finished up running a commodity trading fund and switched across into equities in 2001 and have been trading equities in Australia and the US ever since then. So predominantly a trend following style trader.
Did you work as a prop trader at the banks then, or?
No, I was never a prop trader, always trading my own account. I did work for the banks, so I was down on the trading floor at the Sydney Futures Exchange for about 4 or 5 years in the it would be the same as your short sterling pit, I guess, so the short dated interest rate market down there. But I've always traded equities and futures on my own account. I actually had a stint over in London there back in the late 90s for HSBC, then went across to Singapore for a couple of years, pretty well been full-time trading from Singapore. I opened my own commodity fund. We rolled that into a bank in 2001. So that's kind of my corporate stance, but never proprietary trading for either banks or any prop companies.
So what's your trading style then? I take it that it's purely chart and trending, or?
Yeah, that's right. So we're 100% technical in nature. We don't look at any fundamentals whatsoever. And 80% of my own assets are in trend following style strategies, both in Australia and the US. So I run about 4 different styles of trends, and we tend to be longer term in nature. We'd hold positions for 6 to 8 months, and we don't trade on the short side either. We simply go to cash, and all our trading is 100% systematic. So we've developed our own computer algorithms, and they tell us exactly what to buy, when to sell, how many shares to buy, when to go to cash, absolutely everything. So it's fully automated. There's not much we actually have to do on a day-to-day basis. We hold positions, as I said, for 6 to 8 months. And if need be, we'll take a defensive stance just by sitting in cash.
That's interesting you say that, because, in my previous life, when I worked on a prop desk, I mean, we were sort of 70% long, 30% short, and that was part of our hedging. Our risk management profile was to keep us short. Why do you decide not to have shorts, especially with charting? Because I mean, 99% of the shorts we used to take on the desk were through straight through technicals.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of reasons. The main reason is, personally, I've never found, the way I would look at it, Martin, is I would need to see the short side trades stand on their own 2 feet, if you like. Okay, so I wouldn't put a short trade on just for a hedge purpose, if you like. I would put a short trade on if I knew I had some kind of a decent edge over the longer term. And yes, that would make complete sense. However, Personally, I have been unable to come up with anything that I'd really be comfortable with trading. You know, the equity markets on the downside are very, very different to equity markets on the upside. You tend to get very swift downward moves, you know, just like we saw in February, very, very quick, and also quite a very, very quick recovery. So if we were to remove the sustained bear market of, say, you know, the 2008 financial crisis, then, you know, stock prices act very, very differently than that most of the time. So I've never really been comfortable with any metrics that I've been able to produce on the short side. So it's just easier to go to cash. If I want to put a hedge on, I would do an in-the-money collar or a break-even collar or something like that, and that would kind of hedge me. But my systems are reasonably dynamic, especially my Australian system. You know, at the moment, for example, we're 50% in cash, and in the US, we're still 100% invested over there. But, you know, if need be, we'll be out pretty quick smart, and that allows us to avoid those situations, you know, such as the 2008 financial crisis. We were 100% cash by about June 2008, and we actually sat that way through till February, March 2009. So we missed a significant amount of that downside. And it's just a comfortable thing to do. You know, trading on the short side, when all that volatility is there, it's quite stressful. And I also take the opinion that, look, you don't have to be involved all the time. You know, I understand the want that people do want to be involved all the time. But at the end of the day, when it's absolutely hitting the fan like it was back then, sitting on the sideline in cash is actually a pretty comfortable thing to be doing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the issues I had with sort of when you're working for the bank and you're trading their money, you know, you have to trade. If you're not trading, you may as well go home. You know, and the bank likes to see that business going through because, you know, the bank's making money and, you know, and a lot, you know, the leverage and the funding and everything else that's going through this. So that was one of the difficulties. I mean, our model, a big percentage of our portfolio was pairs trading anyway, which I can imagine you wouldn't agree with that at all, would you? It wouldn't be your style.
I've investigated pairs trading. You know, I spent a lot of my time researching and that kind of stuff. But look, again, I've never really made a serious attempt at doing it. I'm sure there's definitely something there, but, you know, I'm just happy with what I'm doing. I'm not trying to be everything to everybody. And, you know, it's like the old question, why don't I trade cryptocurrencies? Well, I trade equities. I don't trade cryptocurrencies. It's as simple as that, you know. And it's funny you were saying with where you were working with a prop shop. I used to know a guy that was a prop trader at Société Générale, and he was a very successful trader and made a lot of his money, you know, in the first 9-10 months of the year, made most of his budget. And the bank wouldn't let him sit out for the last 2 months, and invariably in those last 2 months he lost a heck of a lot of it. So, you know, sometimes it pays to just say, right, I've made my budget, I'm out.
Yeah, I've been there, know that feeling. You've seen your bonus disappear.
That's not a great
feeling. great. So listen, let's get back into charting itself. So, you know, a few years ago, I've always been involved with charts, a little bit like your story. I first started off trading FTSE futures at £25 a point back in the sort of late 90s. And that was certainly hair raising enough. And then, you know, obviously, I think with any futures or FX trading or anything like that, certainly indices trading, it's just too big a market to be able to look at it from a fundamentals perspective. So obviously, technical analysis is the thing you're going to go for. And which are the technicals, I suppose, I'm asking you? What do you look for? I mean, do you use moving averages? Is it MACD, stochastics? You know, what's your thing? Please don't say Elliott Wave because I might put the phone down on you.
So the models that I run currently, we basically using momentum. So momentum is just, and we're using relative momentum as well. So what we're doing, example, we'll take the S&P 500. will measure the momentum of all the constituents of the S&P 500 over the last X days. So let's call it, say, the last 200 days as an example. We'll measure the rate of change, just simple rate of change over that period of time, and then we'll rank them from the strongest to the weakest. And then we'll volatility adjust those positions, and then we'll buy as many as we can. So at any given time, in one of our portfolios, for example, we'll have sort of 16 positions on. And then we'll just do that and we'll ride those positions for 1 month, and then we'll repeat that on the first business day of the next month. And we just, that's how we do it, basically. We're always in the strongest of the strong stocks. If one of those stocks falls out, we sell it and it gets replaced by another one. If the market itself goes under a certain moving average, so let's say, you know, a 150-day moving average, we'll deem the market as being bearish, and that's not a favorable time to be involved, so we'll just go 100% to cash straight away. So it's a very robust strategy. We trade several models of that across several different markets, and it's very simple, you know, very simple. It's very robust. Momentum is now academically significantly more accepted than what it was even, you know, 10 years ago. And it's a true market anomaly. So it works very well. But in terms of actual technicals, there's not much to it. We don't really use RSI or any of those traditional kind of things. It's just simply measuring the momentum over a period of time. We do run some mean reversion style systems. They would only take up about 20% of my assets that we put into the market. And they can and do use more traditional technical indicators. So, for example, one of those models uses Bollinger Bands, basically reversion to the mean on a breakout of, a breakdown through the lower Bollinger Band as an example. And one of the other ones also uses an RSI, just looking for an oversold condition in an RSI. And that's they would be the two specific kind of technical indicators that we would use on a common basis with our systems. Discretionary portfolios, which personally I don't trade, but some of our clients do trade, the only indicator that we use is a slow stochastic, and we use that as actually a divergence indicator. You know, that would be one of the most potent setups that I would be looking for. If there was one technical setup that I was allowed to trade, that would be a divergence, a type A bullish or bearish divergence. And that operates on any kind of time frame. It's a very powerful setup. It is also very adaptable because you can trade it with the outright instruments, or you can also trade options in and around it. So, for example, let's say you have a bullish divergence on a stock. So that basically means we're looking, it's in a downtrend and we're looking for the bounce on the divergence. You can sell a put spread below that level. Because the chances of the absolute low breaking are very, very low, and trading a put spread for a near-term expiry, you know, you've got a lot working for you with that. And conversely, the opposite can be applied as well. So if you find a type A bearish divergence, you can sell a call spread above it, and you can build a portfolio of various put spreads and call spreads, because, you know, on a reasonably sized universe, you'll find quite a few type A bearish and type A bullish divergences going on at the same time. So, you know, that can be quite a good thing to do.
That's interesting. Do you look at the VIX index at all?
I don't really. A lot of my trading mates do, but personally, I don't. I'm always kind of urged to kind of do that. I've recently been doing a bit of research into other hedging techniques with my long-only portfolio, so that's something that we briefly looked at. But to answer your question, no.
Okay. And your style, to me, it sounds a bit like sort of Richard Dennis kind of turtle trading. Would you say it's more along those lines, sort of trend following with sort of parameters around that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's certainly the way we started all the way back in the... I started trading the Australian Share Price Index Futures, which is the same as your FTSE. Don't laugh here, this is scary, but back in, you know, when I started 1985, 1986, I was trading that using a 5 and 10 day moving average crossover. So that's where I
started. Golden cross.
I don't know. It was just the glory days before the 1987 crash. I mean, don't confuse brilliance with a bull market was what I should have been told back then.
Yeah,
it wasn't hard to be making money on the long side back then. Doesn't matter what you were doing.
I probably read more technical analysis books that I can sort of shake a stick at, and I sort of studied, I went to the Technical Society for TA and did their exam a few years ago, more years than I care to remember now, and it's all very good. You know, in my mind, technical analysis is a crucial part of trading, although there's a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of techniques sort of GAN and Elliott Wave, as I mentioned before, which I think are just complete nonsense, and you know, I don't add any weight to them, although there's certain people who've made huge amounts of money out of it, so good luck to them. What would you, you know, if you were talking to a beginner now, a newbie, you know, apart from sort of I would say to them, go and get, you know, a copy of Murphy's book, you know, Technical Analysis of Financial Markets, and read that from cover to cover several times. But is there anything that you would advise somebody to do?
I would advise them to learn how to trade, because that's very different to technical analysis. You know, technical analysis is simply a tool. It's like you and I discussing what kind of a car we drive. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what kind of car you drive, it's designed to get you from A to B. That's the goal. And the goal with trading is to make money. Now, how you do that what vehicle you or tool you use to do that's completely up to you and probably be dictated by your personality. And as you quite rightly said, you know, you think Elliott Wave is fairy dust, and there's plenty of other people that would disagree with that. Same with GAN. I mean, you know, I don't have too much time for GAN, but I'm not going to stand on a pedestal and say momentum's the only way to make money, because I know and I understand that everybody's personality is different and dictates the way they're going to trade. The most important thing is that you have to be comfortable with what you're doing, because if you're not comfortable with what you're doing, then you're not going to be able to pull the trigger, and you're especially not going to be able to pull the trigger when things get tough, and things will get tough regardless of how you trade. So the first thing I'd say is you've actually got to learn to trade. You actually have to learn about positive expectancy and how to create that, because that is not created by using a Bollinger Band or using an RSI or using a slow stochastic. That does not create a positive expectancy. So I would suggest the first thing to do is understand and learn how to trade. You say you've got a lot of books. Well, that's a very common theme. I used to have a client, he was a doctor. I think, you know, he had 250-plus trading books. They were like little trophies that sat on his shelf, and he'd ring me, I bought this new book, have you read it? And I was like, well, I don't think I need to read any more books. I kind of know what I need to know, and that's the important thing. So when someone comes to me and says, oh, look, Nick, you know, I've done 6 courses, and I've done this $25,000 course, and I've got 200 trading books, and I still can't make money. Well, my answer is, well, you're missing the important point here. You need to learn how to trade. You need to learn how to create a positive expectancy. And once you've got that, well, you know, it's a bit of an aha moment, and the light comes on, and away you go. But that does not revolve around trading books and learning different methods. That's, I think, where everyone falls over. They think there's some secret. They think there's some secret indicator. Look, I'm going through that. I'm a mad keen fisherman. I've only been doing it, haven't been doing it for that long. And I'm still of the opinion that I'm sure there's a lure, or there's a piece of bait, or there's a certain hook or a reel or something that's going to make a big difference. But it's not. You know, it's learning how to fish properly and learning the tides and when the fish bite and where the fish hold and where the fish stay, okay? And it's just like trading. So you've got to learn about positive expectancy, first and foremost, and how to create that. And I personally believe the easiest way to create a positive expectancy is through trend trading. You know, markets have to trend. They can't not trend. They trend on all sorts of different time frames as well, from, you know, a 5-minute chart up to dailies and weeklies and even monthlies. They trend. And the whole basis of creating a positive expectancy with trend following is to simply cut your losses and let your profits run. And if you do it for long enough, you will make money. And it doesn't have to be any more difficult than that. But unfortunately, people think that's too simple. You know, well, that sounds too simple. These hedge funds and whatever got to be doing something dramatically more, you know, different than that and something more scientific than that. But that's really what it comes down to.
Absolutely. So do you think, would you say there's a big difference then between, obviously you said earlier trading in Australia and New York or America. Is there a big difference between the two markets?
Yeah, definitely a big difference, especially since 2008. The Australian market has become significantly more illiquid. I think a lot of people have left the market. The Australian market is also different in its makeup. We have very, very high dividends over here. So share prices tend to be a lot lower and a lot more diluted than what they are in the US. The other major difference is opportunity. You know, the US is a massive market. There's a heap of opportunities out there. You know, what is there, 5,000, 6,000 different stocks? You know, in Australia, if you're trading any size, you're going to be struggling to go really beyond the first top 200 stocks. You know, it starts to become a little bit more illiquid. And once you go past the top 500, you know, it starts to become very, very difficult, especially if you're trading, you know, a decent amount of money. So the US opportunity, liquidity are two major important facets that I really like over there, that's for sure.
Okay, great. You've recently launched a new business as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We just launched a new business, which is called Trade Long Term. You can find it at tradelongterm.com. And it is, it's free registration and free access to my momentum watch lists. So using our proprietary algorithms, we actually list the top 50 highest momentum S&P 500 stocks. And that becomes a working list, if you like, of looking for opportunities. And there's a couple of simple rules with that. When any of those stocks, for example, are within a couple of cents of their 52-week highs, they tend to be the stocks that will continue if the broader market trades higher. And those that are reasonably close to their 52-week low, as an example, but appear on that list, well, they tend to be breaking out of nice basing formations. So they may be starting a new trend higher. Now, that's not a magic list of stocks, okay? It's not you just go and buy them, but they, you know, from the 5,000 stocks in the US, well, unless you want to flip through 5,000 charts every second day, this gives you a very good targeted list of stocks that you can watch. I know, for example, certain hedge funds, we have a hedge fund client here in Australia. They've got about 15 traders working for them, and they just want to know where the action's happening, where the momentum is, and they'll just screen the whole market once a week looking for these stocks that are on the move. And also in that service is access to my aggressive US strategy. Again, that's a momentum strategy, trades just once a month, and it's a very concentrated strategy. We only have 5 positions, and that's my aggressive strategy, which I trade. So people can watch what goes on there. That's pretty well just in the US market, and predominantly trading, you know, US stocks for those US investors and European investors. A lot of our Australian clients will trade the US market as well. Diversification is a great tool. And even though that's an aggressive portfolio, it's worthwhile having a small percentage of your total portfolio allocated to something that's a little more aggressive.
That's interesting. Okay, so can people follow you on Twitter or Instagram as well?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. That's probably the best place, and that's at The Chartist, T-H-E-C-H-A-R-T-I-S-T, The Chartist.
Great stuff. And have you got, what's your, I don't go into specific stocks because this isn't about sort of tipping anything, but what's your viewpoint on the markets at the moment?
Equity markets, in the very near term, we're going to continue to see some sideways chop. I believe that there's some very good buying demand coming into the US markets at around the 25-50 basis, the S&P 500, just a little bit lower than where we are now, and that's supporting the market. We may test down to those February lows again, but over the next decade, I'm super bullish. I think we are in a secular bull market in the US. I know there's a lot of people saying this bull market has run its course and is getting very tired, but I disagree. I think we've got another 10 years upside in this market. I think we have a long way to run. And, you know, that's why I'm specifically positioned aggressively into the US markets myself. And I'm very positive. Don't get me wrong. There's going to be some setbacks along the way. But I certainly believe we're seeing another period of time like we saw between 1982 and kind of 1998, that period there. And there was certainly some negative periods during that, obviously 87, and then you had the 91, 92, 93 bear market in there as well. But bigger picture, very, very bullish the US market, that's for sure. And that will most likely drag global markets up as well with it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, the market's had so many excuses to go down, and it just hasn't. It's just kept on sort of motoring up. So, I think certainly for the next 12 to 24 months, we're looking at sort of upward momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Nick, it's been great speaking to you. Thank you very much for coming on the Vox Markets podcast, and hopefully catch up with you again soon.
All right then, Martin. Thank you very much for having me on.
Cheers.
Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.